The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
There's a phrase gamblers know, college athletes need to get familiar with as well. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday, and no truth in advertising in that open. Live from Atlanta, Georgia. No, I am live from Murphy, North Carolina. Harrah's Valley River Casino and Resort, tremendous facility here. We are broadcasting live from the book at Harrah's Valley River, again, in Murphy, North Carolina. Anybody listening to my voice right now, anywhere in the network, boom, you could be here within a few hours of a drive. Tomorrow's show will be at Harrah's Cherokee in Cherokee, North Carolina. Again, from the new book, live, daily, in person, same as it's always been just for Vegas. It's everywhere, including North Carolina, live, daily, wagering on collegiate and pro sports. I said that there is a phrase gamblers know that college athletes need to get familiar with as well. It's called pot committed. If you are a poker player, you know this. If you're not, here's pot committed. I'm sitting around the table, and I get my cards, and then I see some cards go out in the middle, and we've been betting, and then another card, and then we bet again, then another card, and bet again. There is a point when you're sitting at a poker table where it has gone around enough times, and you have put enough money in the middle, like, I've got enough skin in the game now. That is pot committed, as in there's no reason, there is no upside, there is no advantage to getting out now. I have gone so far in that the only possible way it can work out for me is to continue down this path. All right, yeah, I'm in for another X dollar, and let me see that final card. You are in so far that it makes no sense to change course. You're pot committed. For NCAA athletes who got the very good news roughly a month ago that the rules committee and then the forwarding of the recommendation, et cetera, that it is now official. Athletes in all sports, if you're on scholarship, all sports, you can transfer and have immediate eligibility. You get to do that one time. Now, devil's in the details. And there had to be some details for this, because usually the panic parade is a little overboard and it's just drama, etc. There was some very well-founded responses, and it was about being able to manage a roster and not get blindsided by kids who say, you know what, I didn't win that starting tight end job at Clemson. I'm transferring right here, right now to NC State. What? Huh? You can still do that, but there are some parameters, and there needed to be. The NCAA has decided we will kind of meet you halfway here. The calendar for the transfer portal for an athlete to take advantage of the one-time immediate eligibility waiver is July 1st this year for all sports. After this year, it will be May 1st. For fall and winter sports. If you want to transfer and make use of your one-time eligibility waiver, you have a deadline. And the reason is, yeah, we want player mobility. We want you to find your spot, but we need you to meet us halfway as well. What you don't want is a kid going through August camp And the last week of August, the head coach says, yeah, I'm actually going with quarterback B. And quarterback A says, hey, Mississippi State, I am out. I'm going to Virginia Tech, which might not be so bad. Instead, he's going to Ole Miss or Arkansas or LSU or anywhere else. And he may compete against you. Or he may go to, if I'm leaving Georgia the third week of August, I'm transferring to Clemson. And I will play against Georgia in a week and a half because I am immediately eligible. Obviously, that would be an issue. Now, the calendar, once we get out of this year, again, fall and winter sports, you can have immediate eligibility. The stipulation is you have to decide by May 1st going forward. Since the rule wasn't passed until basically April 1st this year, when we knew, all right, this is the recommendation, and the recommendation will get voted on and approved, so we knew in advance what was coming. Since the rule didn't get passed till April 1st this year, the NCAA decided, you know what, it would be reasonable to give the kids more than 30 days notice that, yep, you got eligibility, but decide now. Like, this year we will give everyone July 1st. Going forward, that will just be spring sports. Everyone else, May 1st. Now, again, well, what if they still – that defeats the purpose. No, it doesn't. You can still transfer the third week of August if you don't win that starting wide receiver job. You just won't have immediate eligibility. June 30th, transfer. July 1st, transfer, but you have to sit – it's basically like you're going back in time to the previous rules. Now, there is one other pretty big development here, and it is a change involving grad transfers. If you don't remember the history of the grad transfers, it used to be – now, this is going to sound so strange. It's going to sound as strange as teams with unlimited scholarships bringing in, like, 60-guy recruiting classes. All right? That happened. But if you go back to 2005 or 6, that was the mustard seed, the birth of the grad transfer. And originally, that's all it was. You had to be a graduate and have at least 2 years of eligibility remaining. So maybe you redshirted, and then your redshirt freshman, sophomore, junior year, you actually played. And so I graduated. If you have 2 years of eligibility left, you could do it. If you didn't, you got to sit out like everybody else. Then they changed and they realized, oh, yeah, that doesn't do much. So then after a couple of years, and I think the first year, it might have just been a couple of quarterbacks. Like there was an Arizona Vanderbilt transfer, but the requirements were so narrow. I'm not kidding. There might have been like three guys who were able to do it. You had to have 2 years left. So then they said one, and just for graduate transfers. And I've always said, I think after you graduate, you actually achieved the one thing that everyone who goes to college is kind of supposed to do. If you graduate, my opinion has always been, rock on, man. If you have eligibility remaining and you got a degree, go do what you do. And the NCAA for about 15 years agreed. In the fine print of the new arrangement, the new calendar, if you are a grad transfer and you still have like a year of eligibility, for instance, if you transfer as a graduate now and have already used your one-time immediate eligibility waiver, you can't use it. You would have to apply for a special circumstance waiver. So it has been for now about 12 years or so after the original incarnation of that grad transfer thing that's like, hey, this doesn't really apply to very many guys. You've had about a dozen years where once you graduated, you got eligibility, go play wherever. That will change. If you have already transferred and used it, you don't get it again. You would have to apply, and again, you go back in time as if it was 2013 or 2009 or 2000 whatever. Pot committed, folks. If you're wondering, or maybe you're of a mind, because all you're hearing from the choir, and it's been for about a full calendar year, is give the players every right possible. And there's a lot of, again, very narrow constrictions that have been on scholarship athletes, specifically in men's basketball, football, baseball, the revenue-producing sports that universities wanted so much certainty in. So we want certainty, so we're going to restrict the ability for the players to leave, because we want to be able to plan, all right, we got a good recruiting class, it's going to equal on-field success, which equals money. They always wanted to have as much control as possible, and they realized, we're going to have to give some. So this is how it has turned out. So if all you've heard over the last, you know, year is about player rights and mobility, and they should be able to transfer and play immediately, fantastic. You did need to be able to give the coaches some sort of mechanism, the programs, to at least plan. So we want this for you. Do it by June 30th. If you wait till the next day, sorry. You've just gone back in time. Now you got to sit too. All right, a lot more going on. Again, the Chuck Oliver Show broadcasting live from Harris Valley River, Murphy, North Carolina. Going to take a break. Come back with more next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's certainly a very tough competition to get in those four right now, and so much of it becomes who you played, and that's one of the really aggressive things we've done at Georgia is scheduling out. It's been my thought all along that if the CFP expands, the strength of schedule is going to play a major factor in that, so we want to go out and get a lot of big games outside our natural SEC conference schedule.
It is expanding. And Georgia is among a host of programs that has done, I'll give them, they may actually have the belt, or they're in the running for it, one of five or six teams that has done a tremendous job in upping their non-conference slate going forward. Specifically when? For the most part, after the 21-22, 23, 24, after the 2025 season, I'm just counting forward because I think there's 5 years left on the current round of contracts. You have two more years in the three-year rotation of bowls, and then you have a full three, so that'd be 5 years. So Kirby Smart was on with Paul Feinbaum, and Paul Feinbaum has a syndicated radio show, started in Alabama. He's on ESPN now, I think, SEC Network. So he was on the Paul Feinbaum show discussing the college football playoff expansion, and it's not a possible, it's a definite. Chuck Oliver Show here live at Harris Cherokee Valley River in Murphy, North Carolina, and Kirby was talking about expanding the playoffs, and some of his further comments, quote, I think if you polled any coach, it would be foolish to say you wouldn't want playoff expansion. Does Nick Saban want playoff expansion? And I'm asking that because I don't recall his comments. He may have said yes or no. Has Dabo spoken on that? Here's where I know what Kirby – I think if you polled any coach, it would be foolish to say you wouldn't want playoff expansion. Now, he may be correct. I would offer a slightly different version of that. If you polled any coach who hasn't won a national championship, yeah, that guy's going to say playoff expansion. Anytime you add more, you devalue what was already there. There was, remember South Carolina was in the ACC? Now I'm going to get these details wrong, but this goes back to like early 70s. And who was it? McGuire and Leahy and what, Bobby Cremins? But like I said, I'm going to get some of the details wrong. But there was a year where South Carolina, they might have been like 24-1 or something. And because South Carolina, basketball, because they didn't win the ACC tournament, they didn't go to the NCAA tournament. All right. That was high stakes, man. You got to win your conference tournament or you don't go to the dance. And I think at that point, there were like maybe 16 or 24 teams in, quote, March Madness. This was 50 years ago. Well, now there's 64, and now there's 68, and now there's going to be – I mean, this is going to keep expanding. If you were a head coach in college basketball in the 70s and you said, hey, we've been dancing 11 straight years. Really? Wow. If you've been dancing 10 or 11 or 12 straight, it's still not nothing, but it's not the same. Anytime you add more, you devalue the achievement of everyone who has already earned it. And so Kirby, who has not made the playoffs since 2017, he has not won a national. Kirby's sitting back and going, yeah, we want more playoff spots. That's the college basketball coach who's missed March Madness three straight years. You know what? Actually, there was a head coach, and I'm trying to who was it? It might have been Paul Hewitt. I'm trying to remember talking to a head coach, and he's like, I think everybody goes. Like a 356-team tournament. Just play a couple of fewer regulars, and everybody makes the dance. I was like, okay, well, every coach can say it then. Chuck Oliver Show continues on a Thursday. Dan, how are you?
Oh, everything is great here. And by the way, Nick Saban is against college football playoff expansion. Says that it would continue to devalue the bowl system as is, and if you expand it, it's only going to do that worse.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what he said a couple of days ago on said show that you mentioned. But, Chuck, you know what, though? I might want to put his concerns at ease, and everybody, for example, because I think you've had the other people as well who have spoken out against college football playoff expansion and said, well, the regular season will be useless because it's just going to leave a landing spot for the teams who are normally there. The Heritages are going to be given a pass even with two losses, and they can still get in. Okay, fine. Let me lay out some criteria for said teams. I know that there are the people out there who say, well, you can't play too many because then it's going to take away from finals, everything else. Again, I'm going to alleviate your concerns. 11-game regular season schedule, two bye weeks. Everybody plays nine conference games. Even if you don't have that amount of teams in your conference, double up, whatever you got to do. Two non-conference games. I'll give you one tune-up if you're a Power 5 program, but you need another Power 5. And it's extra credit bonus points for those who add a second Power 5 into their rotation and add them into their schedule. And we're already seeing programs, as you mentioned. Georgia is doing that already. Florida has done it. Texas is doing it. Notre Dame. The names go on and on. How about the group of fives out there? I had a professor in college who would only allow us, Chuck, to earn a B unless you wrote a 25-page paper at the end of the semester. In their case, their 25-page paper needs to be two Power 5 programs because guess what? You want to be in there at the end of the season? I want you to earn it if you're Cincinnati, Central Florida, Boise State, whoever it is. If we're going to have somebody in there taking away from a Power 5 heritage program, make sure that it's, ooh, they got in here? I got to watch them.
Yeah, I think, and I'll say this unfortunately, but I don't know if I'm going to use that strong a word, but last season in the SEC made it less likely than ever that we get expanded conference schedules because of so many losses so early in the year.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
College football on the Chuck Oliver Show, regardless of locale. And today, Harris Cherokee Valley River Casino and Resort in Murphy, North Carolina. That's where we're broadcasting. Tomorrow will be Harris Cherokee in Cherokee, North Carolina. Again, tomorrow, if we take the DeLorean all the way back in time and examine the Texas A&M football program, there had never really been sustained periods of success. They got interesting with Emory Ballard for a while. He coached, basically kind of invented the wishbone sort of-ish. But they had some success with Emory. And then they didn't, and then Jackie showed up, and you're like, okay, this is what it can be. And so now for, I'll say, about 40 years, Texas A&M been a player. And about 5-6 years ago, they pulled the impossible. They became more relevant in college football than the Texas Longhorns. There was also a missed opportunity in there because they didn't drive the stake through Austin, and they didn't capitalize and build on the early Sumlin years. And so where they sit now with Jimbo Fisher, in my estimation, it's as about as rock solid. And I'm talking about, you know, cinder blocks, not sand. As this program has been since certainly R.C. Slocum was there, probably. Want to welcome on now a guy who does a great job covering that program and has for a really long time from TexAgs.com. It is Olin Buchanan. Olin, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, Chuck. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, do you go back to the Emory Ballard days?
Oh, I remember. I'm not old enough to have been covering them then, but I was definitely alive. And at the time, I was a big Longhorns fan, so it was kind of a thorn in my side to see how they went from a struggling program to one that dang near won the national championship in 75.
And then, you know, and then there's a couple of off years, and then Jackie shows up, and I think you were on the line there. For about four decades now, Texas A&M has been – they've been a player. They've been a real program that you got to look at and go, uh-oh, here come the Aggies, by and large. Where are they now with Jimbo Fisher? Because I need him to get better. I need him to take that – and I ain't even an Aggie fan. And I'm looking at him going, there's another step, and I just don't know if that next step is attainable this season because it's beating Bama.
Yeah, and that's a huge step, isn't it? I think the program is in a better shape than it's ever been in the history of the program, and it's not just because of Jimbo Fisher, although he's absolutely one of, if not the number one reason. But I believe for the first time in program's history, you have a university administration that has made a commitment to playing you know, at the $100 tables to really wanting to be among the elite. They've given it lip service before. They would pay Jackie Sherrill a lot of money. They'd pay R.C. Slocum a lot of money. They wouldn't give him money to keep his assistants. They wouldn't keep up the arms race of facilities with when Texas and Oklahoma and LSU were building new buildings and things like that for the program, A&M lagged behind. But A&M has now made that commitment to their facilities, and they're as good as anybody in the country. Jimbo Fisher can pay his assistants and be able to keep them. You know, you saw Mike Elko. You probably saw him, the defensive coordinator, decided this week that he would turn down a possible job offer to be the head coach of Kansas to stay here. So, you know, it's the first time the program and the university as a whole has made a commitment to winning.
And I think, again, you were listening there. Contrast what was thought to be possible at the beginning of the Sumlin years with what I label as kind of a missed opportunity. Because I admit, you know, as a guy who I grew up my entire life been watching college football, if you would have asked me at any point before about 10 years ago, will the Aggies ever be consistently more relevant than Texas? I was like, it's not possible. And it absolutely has been true for several years. But is there any bit of a little missed opportunity in that window as well?
From the Sumlin years?
Yeah, from the ability to really kind of drive a stake through UT if you had a chance.
Well, you know, as much as A&M was pretty mediocre and not reaching their potential in the Sumlin years, I think with the exception maybe one season when that they were still doing you know, better than Texas. You know, Texas has been struggling too. Our whole state for a while was down. Our players were going other places, anywhere but Texas schools, it seemed like. But yeah, I mean, you had an opportunity, I think, to be among the best programs in the country. But then we found out, you know, the hard way that maybe you didn't have a coach and coaching staff that was as committed to winning. And you saw that, you know, that they did so well with players that were recruited under the Mike Sherman regime. And then, you know, you remember you had the two quarterbacks or five-star guys that left in the same week. You know, I don't have enough time. I could go on and on and on. You know, you saw them blow a 34-point lead to UCLA and all these things. And you realize that maybe the leadership and the commitment from the coaching staff wasn't there. And I think that's changed completely. The culture has changed completely since they brought in Jimbo Fisher.
He's obviously made so many great improvements with the program. And let's talk on field with spring being completed. And I was mentioning this obviously earlier in the week, but as it was presented, you know, from the outside, it was, you know, you got an athlete, you got an arm, and Haynes King is ahead and he's leading this thing. And spring is an opportunity for him to kind of solidify that. And what I have heard leaving spring by everybody's take is, hey, neck and neck, Zach Calzada, he's in this. Is that more of a good thing from Calzada, or did Jimbo just want to see more from Haynes King?
I think it's a good thing all the way around. From you want your quarterbacks to be good, and Zach Calzada is playing well, and he played well in the spring game. You know, he threw for about 250 yards. Now he played with the second team unit most of the game. He did play with the first team unit too, but and they have some good young receivers like Moose Muhammad's kid who played really well. So we had some good guys to throw to, but he just showed off that big arm. Everybody knows that he has a cannon for a right arm, and he showed it off, and he looked really good. Haynes King, I thought he looked good. They both had some big drops. They both threw one touchdown pass. They both had an interception. They both were involved in a fumble. So I think that competition is as close as it can be. It's about the difference between an alligator and a crocodile. And I would suspect that in the August, if they remain this close in the competition, that Haynes would probably have an edge just on the fact that he's also an excellent runner. He's one of the fastest guys on the team. And, you know, Jimbo went with the more athletic guy when he chose Kellen Mond over Nick Starkle. a few years ago, and I suspect that he would do the same thing again if all else is equal.
I think that Texas A&M may have the best 1-2 running back in the conference, and I also think that they may have the best, you know, and I was mentioning this earlier in the week, you know, the Percy Harvin position is still around, apparently. It's still something on a depth chart because I hear players compared to Percy all the time, and I kind of roll with it because I know what people are talking about. It was Kadarius Toney last year. There's a lot of Percys around the SEC this year. Missouri's got one, Kentucky's got one, Georgia's got one. I think – A&M's got the best one in the league with Anaya Smith. So talk about his particular skills, but also the combination in the backfield. And it actually goes beyond just those two.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think Anaya is going to get a whole lot of look in the backfield this year because he's just such a good receiver. And I'm not saying he won't ever be in the backfield. And I won't say he won't carry the ball on, like, jet sweeps because I absolutely expect that to happen. But he's just a dynamic player. He's a you know, a big play guy that they can put him just about anywhere and feel like he's going to make plays. I think the comparison with Kadarius Toney is really an accurate one. I think they're really the same guy in different uniforms. And yeah, I mean, he had a big game in the bowl game win over North Carolina. Had a couple long passes that he caught, but. As well as he played as a running back, because he did shift back between running back and receiver, I just don't think they're going to need him there because of Isaiah Spiller's 1,000-yard guy. And some say I've seen, I'm not saying I have, but some of those NFL guys that project a couple years out are saying that he might be the top running back in the country. I don't know if he is. And now their backup, who I expect to be the backup, was a freshman last year, Devon Achane, mm-hmm. and he was the MVP of the Orange Bowl. And he may be the fastest guy in college football. He's running track right now, ran a 10.300, his first time running the 100, and has already run about, I think it's a 21.3, maybe it's faster than that, in the 200. He's just, like, barely off the Olympic qualifying, and that was, again, in his first meet. So, you know, he's a big play threat. And they also have a, depending on which recruiting service you believe, they have a five-star guy coming in, L.J. Johnson. And then there's a kid from Georgia that they absolutely love, DeAndre Jackson. So they're really, they're pretty loaded at running back now.
Flip it around to the defense because, I mean, you talk about loaded, my gosh. They only lost a couple of good ones, but they only lost a couple of guys over there. And then they didn't lose their coordinator, and you referenced that. I was talking earlier in the week. I think defensive coordinator at A&M is better than head coach at Kansas. And we have seen Olin. We have seen guys make different choices there. Dan Enos was a head coach at Central Michigan. He was like, I'd rather be a coordinator in the SEC. Other guys have just jumped at whatever job they could get to become a head coach. What was going on by your understanding with Elko and the Kansas job? Did that ever get real?
Well, yeah, it was real. I mean, he interviewed, and he was one of, I think, four finalists. And I think when it comes down to it, I don't know what Kansas was offering. It might have been, I'm guessing, around $3 million. Well, Mike makes over two here. And, you know, you throw in the difference in, you know, there's no state income tax here. So the difference in money probably wouldn't have been that much.
Yeah.
Plus, his defense this year is going to be absolutely stacked. He's got his probably the best defense he will have had this year. And last year was number one in the SEC statistically. So if he hangs on here for a year, I'm guessing that next year there might be a better job, a better head coaching opportunity where you have a chance to win more than you do at Kansas would come open. And, you know, I'm sure he would have a chance for something like that because we don't think he's going to be around much longer. He's proven himself over and over, and just having him here for another year is gravy.
Olin, I always appreciate the insight, brother. Wanted to kind of bounce around to some bigger picture sort of, you know, bird's eye things today, and appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, Olin Buchanan from TexAgs.com.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. I appreciate everybody coming here, getting your college football conversation each day. I'm going to give HBCU some credit here because I had mentioned maybe a couple of years ago, it's one of those off-season days where, and actually I think it was leading up to the draft, and I was talking about maybe the 1976 NFL draft. I think like three of the first six first-round picks or three of the first seven. Go look at the 75 draft, too. Multiple first-round picks, top 10 picks from HBCUs. Jackson State, Grambling, Southern, et cetera. And what has happened to historically black colleges and universities over the past – well, no, actually, let me take this back. Because nobody had money or facilities, really. Yeah, big stadiums. Big-ish stadiums. There was a reason that Alabama, you know, everybody knows the Iron Bowl was in Birmingham, you know, that they would play Auburn in Birmingham at Legion Field every year. Alabama played all of their big games in Birmingham. If they wanted a huge crowd, Tennessee, Birmingham. LSU, all of them were there. Georgia, Birmingham. Because nobody had facilities, nobody had money, it didn't matter. Then you start getting money, and there was a divide. And I'll be, if you're a black kid coming out, I don't know, Louisiana, Mississippi, maybe Minnesota, wherever, there was something about playing for Grambling. Like, that's kind of cool. Jackson State, that was kind of cool. Because maybe you visited Southern Miss and Jackson State, you looked around and you're like, yeah, kind of the same. And it wasn't the same anymore. And then TV took over, and then TV dollars took over. And then I'll tell you, HBCUs, that about 20 years or more, I don't know. I don't have the perfect timeline figured out. But a couple decades where they became irrelevant on the big stage. And I'm talking about NFL draft picks, public consciousness, mainstream awareness and appreciation. They became just so borderline irrelevant in the broad spectrum of college football. I talked a couple of years ago about, folks, this is an issue because I know time moves on and there are a lot of places that used to play a lot of really great college football and they don't play football there anymore, don't even have program anymore. That's, I mean, Chicago, did we know that the first Heisman Trophy winner came from Chicago? Jay Berwanger? All right, I don't know if Chicago has a team anymore. So it happens. But this was a little different to me, and so I brought it up a couple of years ago, and I was like, man, stinks. If you don't have money, then you don't attract players. And honestly, now if you're a kid coming out of high school and you visited Grambling and then you visited South Alabama, which I don't even – when did Jack start their program? Like 20 years ago? Visited South Alabama. You're like, oh, really? Doug Williams was a Heisman finalist at Grambling. He was a first-round draft pick. He won a Super Bowl. South Alabama, what you got? New stadium? A lot of money? Oh, all right. Well, I was thinking about Grambling, but I'm going to cancel my visit. That's for South Alabama. that looked around and was like, let's start a program. There's a lot of good players around here. And then folks said, hey, Mobile's kind of a fun city. Hey, South Alabama, they're building a – yeah, go Jags. And then there were two kids who didn't go to Tennessee State, and one kid that didn't go to Southern, and one kid that didn't go to Jackson State, and then they all went to South Alabama or where Southern Miss or UAB, who's building themselves a flashy new stadium in downtown Birmingham as well. HBCUs, I'll give them about as much credit as you can the last week of April. Deion Sanders took the job at Jackson State, and I'll say it has played out for a season, and it worked. When I first watched them, they were playing a game against an NAIA school, John Waters, I believe is the name of the program out of Jacksonville, and then they started playing more like level equal programs. And I, you know what my measuring stick was? Because Deion had never really run – no, he had never run a program. I know he had coached maybe at high school. There was a private academy, I'm trying to remember, youth league, all that stuff. Deion knows football. There's a difference between knowing football and being a head coach and running a program. Deion's kind of running the Jackson State program, and I say kind of because I don't know recruiting, fundraising. I have no idea what all his duties include. But he's the head coach. And the first couple of weeks, do you know what my measuring stick was? I said, folks, it's on TV because it's college football and it's spring and, you know, Michigan and Florida State and LSU aren't playing. So ESPN's like, who is playing? All right, Jackson State. I watched the first couple of weeks, and I remember coming on the air. I was like, folks, it looks right. It looks right. If you told me, not Deion Sanders, I'm going to pick somebody. I don't know, Lovie Smith, Dan Quinn, Jeff Fisher. Just a former NFL coach with a resume. Mike Martz. If you'd have told me Mike Martz was hired at Jackson State and I just watched them week one and week two, play calls would have been different. But kind of looked the same. Mike Martz coached in Super – Mike Martz won a Super Bowl as an OC. Coached in the Super Bowl as a head coach. He's as – big a resume as you can have. It looked the same with Deion Sanders. And now Eddie George has accepted the job at Tennessee State, and that's a good program. Go check out Joe Adams and everybody else. And now you see the story that Southern University, Baton Rouge, former NFL running back Marshall Faulk, and I don't even know if this has advanced yet, okay, because I had this note from 2 days ago. And I don't know if it has advanced. But I'm going to give you a note about Southern straight from the NFL Network. This is Ian Rappaport, former NFL running back Marshall Faulk is a candidate for the Southern head coaching job, and the sides have had conversations. Now, again, that's from a couple of days ago. Had it on my notes. Got bogged down in the Randy Clements thing and never wound up bringing it up. But I have no idea how this turns out. I don't know who Southern hires. Maybe they've already hired Marshall Faulk. I don't know who they hire. I don't know what the on-field product looks like, but I'm going to give them credit because Southern is trying something different. And it's not outlandish, crazy. Like, they didn't hire a former basketball player to come coach the program. They hired a former football player. Now, there's a difference between being able to play and to be able to run a program, not coach and know about the game. I'm saying run a program. So, I can't tell you how it's going to turn out. But it already has turned out, at least for a season, at Jackson State. Eddie George is about as squared away individual as I've ever been around, and I don't know him at all. I'm saying I've been around him some. No idea about personality and all that stuff. I'm just saying I have observed Eddie George in person. Pretty buttoned up. Marshall Faulk, again, if he's looking into coaching, and what was it Eddie George said? It's almost a responsibility to do this. If this is what Marshall Faulk's going to do, if this is what maybe FAMU decides to do, or Bethune-Cookman, or whomever, South Carolina State, if you get on the radar, that's the big achievement right now. To stay on the radar, it can't just be the name. I just talked about the Southern University Jaguars. I don't know that I've talked about Southern's football program. Aren't they the Jags? Yeah. I don't know that I've talked about Southern since Devon Gales had his injury in Athens, and that was like 5 years ago, and then I went to a charity fundraiser, emceed the thing about a year later. I don't know that I mentioned Southern University since then. So, yes, this is the first step. You got on the radar. If you follow through and then it looks right and you actually win games, fantastic win for the entire group.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.